Okay, so I'm going to be doing a bit of review. For one, it's good to review. For two, smaller class. The last time we covered this, a lot of people gone. And number three, it's been a whole week since we had the singing on Wednesday night. So we talked about the principles of the pit last time and the basic idea that doesn't sound very profound, but I think that it's worth considering. The principles of the pit is the further down you are, the harder it is to get out. We talked about the fact that the pit is not shaped like this, where every level is the same as before. The pit is shaped like this, where it's more difficult the harder down you get. And it just things become worse and worse, compounding problems, things like that. So the deeper you are, number one, problems compound and get harder to fix. Where's Jay? I hope I'm saying this word right today. Mm-hmm. Compound. Problems compound and get harder to fix the deeper you are. The slavery increases, and therefore the longer it takes to improve one level. These are generalizations, of course, but these the general principles. Another way to see it is improvement is happening. Improvement, it feels like it's such small steps at the beginning. It's real improvement, but it feels slow. It looks slow, right? So that's principle number one. Number two, the more help you're going to need from others. The further down you are in the pit, the more help that you're going to need from other people. You're going to need a hands-on rescue, hands-on encouragement from others. And that could be all kinds of resources, of course, including our spiritual family and our brethren here. And even if you're in a situation where you're needing more professional help, you're going to need to lean on your brethren in big ways and small ways. So we talked about James 5, going to the elders, prayer, the prayer of faith when you're sick and the Lord raises up those people. If there's sins, you can be forgiven. There's healing that's needed. So confess your sins, pray for one another, for healing, and the prayer of a righteous person has great power in its working. So all these concepts together, we need each other, we need prayer, we need to be able to talk to others, and we need help from other people, right? And so that's for any kind of pit that we're in, we need to be leaning on our brethren. The deeper you are, number three, the less rational you are, thinking gets worse, right? You're not thinking straight, you're thinking less rationally, more fixated on something or more in pain or you name it. We talked about Exodus 6:9. Moses spoke to the people of Israel, but they didn't listen because of the broken spirit and harsh slavery. So we talked about dealing with people in weakness, right? Like when your wife needs a nap, we don't need to keep debating it. Let's come back to this later. Let's get some sleep, right? Arguing with a level 8 or 9 or 10 addict or anxious or depressed person is going to be useless. That's not going to be what's helpful to them. We saw this with Jeremiah. God tells him, this is for good. This is fine. I'm protecting you. And it just kind of bounces off Jeremiah, right? We see that, Lord, remember me, visit me. Are you going to be failing me? No, I just told you. I'm going to be with you. So not those things not sinking in. Certainly see that with Job in a lot of ways. So therefore, number four, the less effective it is to address your thinking directly. Trying to fix your thinking just by thinking is less and less useful. Obviously, we need to think, but you don't just fix your thinking by thinking when you're in the pit. Other methods become necessary, and we're going to be focusing today on learning by doing. We see this in the Bible all the time in many ways, right? God doesn't just give us facts. He doesn't just give us data. He gives us imagery. He gives us poetry. He gives us brethren in Christ, and we don't come together just to recite facts. We sing together. We even sing lovely songs together. We hug each other. We smile at each other. We have a family meal together called the Lord's Supper. All of that is helpful to us, not just more data, not just more information. Isaiah and Jeremiah doing dramatic things to get people's attention. So does this mean, this slide is new, even though we're still in the review part. Does this mean it's not worth it to speak the truth to people who are deep in the pit? But, you know, they're not as rational. They're not thinking very well. So no use speaking the truth to them. Is that what we're saying?
No,
right? Of course, that's not what we're saying. Remember what Jesus said to the disciples. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. So it's like, I'm going to tell you some things, but you're not. This isn't going to sink in, and I'll have to tell you some things later. But you see that principle, right? People still need to hear good things. They still need to hear true things. They still need to hear helpful things, right? But just don't expect words to be enough, right? So again, to use cocaine as our dramatic example, look, I keep telling that guy to stop, you know, taking cocaine. He never listens. You know, I've told him 5-6 times. Well, we wouldn't say that with cocaine, right? You're like, you need help. Like, you need to get away from your friends. You need to get into programs. So you're away from that drug. And you need phone calls every day. You need encouragement. Let's study the Bible. You'd say all those things, right? Well, we need to speak the truth to people, but don't expect words just to be enough. So instead of picturing that you're feeding them with the bread that they need, see it more like you're giving them crumbs. And that's a trail of breadcrumbs to help them along. It's, you're keeping them from starving to death, but realize they're not absorbing everything. So you're still feeding them truth, you're still loving them, helping them, but realize that when they're that deep down, it's gonna take a while, right? So I think this is helpful. Ephesians 4 and 5, speaking the truth in love, we grow up in every way. But literally there, the Greek is truthing in love. Now that doesn't sound like good English. It's not good English. We don't talk that way. I say, I'm gonna go over there and truth him. You know, Lee was truthing us this morning. We don't talk like that. Because we say speak the truth. But it's a little broader than that. It's not just speaking the truth. Truthing is not just words, but even more than that. So when I greet you in the Lord, when I speak hope to you, when I speak faith in you and confidence in you and all those things we see in Christian dialogue, that's part of the truth too. When I give you a hug because I love you, that's part of the truth, right? So you don't just speak the truth. We want to truth each other in love with more than just words. Okay, so here's the idea. The deeper you are, number one, problems compound. They get harder to fix. The more help we need from other people, we're less rational, and therefore it's less effective to directly address your thinking. These are generalizations, but it's helpful to remember these principles when things are tough for ourselves, when things are tough for other people. Okay, so we're going to highlight learning by doing. And the homework from last week was Philippians 4, 6 through 9. And I want you to look at this passage and think about, are there some learning by doing principles here? Now, I tweaked the translation because a more literal translation here is helpful. Philippians 4, 6 through 9, towards the end of here, he says, whatever is true, honorable, just, pure, lovely. He says, these things think about. And then he says, what you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, these things do. Now, the ESV originally said, practice these things and the God of peace will be with you. I think it's really helpful to bold, underline, italicize these things think about and these things do. And the God of peace will be with you. So when you were thinking about this, the question number one was, what are some learning by doing principles that we see going on here in these verses? What thoughts did you have? Yes.
Well, there's a lot of like actions, like make your request known, think about these things, do these things, but it's also, you've seen it in me, I've modeled this.
Okay. So I think you really hit on two things there. One is there's a lot of actions here to do. Pray, don't be anxious, and that doesn't go away just immediately, but it's this thing that I'm aware of and this thing I'm going to be working on. And I'm going to pray to God, and I'm going to seek for that peace. And I'm going to think about these things, and these things I'm going to do. The second thing you mentioned is the modeling there. What you saw in me, what you learned and received and heard in me and seen in me, those things I taught you and the things that I modeled for you, these things do. Okay, good. Other thoughts about learning by doing here?
The first part almost seems like... It's always worry. You don't tell them, hey, just don't worry. That is the first thing it says.
Yes.
And it says almost like it's replace it with prayer, replace it with thinking about other things.
Yes, absolutely. Good. And I would say it even starts with noticing, right? That's going to be a key word for us this quarter is just awareness. That's so helpful for us. So be more aware. Notice, oh, I'm being anxious right now. I love thinking there's a brother that we worshiped with in New York. He spoke here. He came here in 2018, Vinay from India, remember him? And he just tells the story. You know, he's been a Christian a few years, and he's sitting there working on his job or his bills or something. He's so stressed. And he's like, what are we going to do? And his wife, who grew up a Christian, she's like, it's going to be okay. Like, we can trust in God. He goes, Oh, yeah, we can trust in God. You know, it was like, as a new Christian, that's right. I'm supposed to think differently, you know, about these things. So noticing, I'm anxious, right? And then take action to pray. Notice what I'm thinking about and choose to focus on other things. Okay, Nancy, I saw a hand.
That's what I was gonna say. That's the next part, is the awareness or recognizing and then deciding to make a change.
Okay, that's right. So with your thinking, it doesn't, we don't improve our thinking by just telling myself, don't think about that. The way we change our thinking is, instead, I'm going to focus on this other thing, right? And so, I could put a poster up here, say, don't look at the poster. But what's more effective is if I put the poster up here, I'm going to say, okay, now everyone keep looking over here. Look at this different thing. Keep your eyes fixed. That's Hebrews 12. That's Proverbs 4. So that idea of what we want to do is actually focus on other things. That's what helps us to change our thinking. Okay, Dixon first.
I think be thankful. I think then there we see the with Thanksgiving, but the idea of having an attitude of thankful.
Okay, good. And some of this is bleeding over into the second question: is what are the thinking things, right? What are the biological, the body things? What are the relational things? And that's okay. That's bleeding over into that. Betsy.
You know, I get what you're saying. Don't think about that. What you're anxious about, but it does say, in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request. So we have to think about them enough to pray. Sometimes very specific.
Yes.
What is truly bothering me? What am I anxious about? And literally, give it to the Lord.
Yes. So that's actually one of the key principles in helping people to improve in their anxiety. Because I want you to address it fully here, and then I want you to drop it. And if we need to come back to it later, we'll fully go here. But none of this all day thinking about it. That's useless. We're going to address it, and then we're going to drop it and move on. And that is very helpful. So bring it to God. Talk about it overtly. Okay, but then I'm going to leave it there, and I'm going to move on with my life. Those are huge, helpful principles. Okay, Jason, was that your hand?
Well, yeah, I think you kind of hit on it just there. I mean, it's that idea of not that we're not thinking about it, but we're not sitting fretting over it, and that's what we have a tendency to do as humans. We sit and we fret over things.
Yes.
And rather than doing that, he says replace that with prayer.
Yes.
Right. Not that you're not thinking about that problem, but instead of fretting over it, you're praying about it.
Yes.
It's just a different action, and then that's what brings us peace.
Yes, and I think even better, instead of saying it's a different action, it's actual action.
Yeah,
it is problem solving. It is, what was Yapko's terminology? Effective problem solving, like you're doing something, as opposed to the sitting, ruminating, you think you're doing something, you're not. So really, and we'll talk about this later, but it's like there's three paths I can choose. One is to drop it. The other extreme is to directly address it. And what we tend to do is do neither of those. We go in the middle, which is just kind of worrying. So don't do the middle thing. Either aggressive problems, over here, the aggressive problem solving, doing something, or drop it. Don't do the middle thing. That's what's not helpful. Okay, Ryan, did you have anything?
I was just gonna say that anxiety often, but you kind of govern it, but it kind of invokes that feeling of like, you can't do anything, nothing you do will change it.
Yes.
And then you replace it with something that actually does change it.
Yes.
And there is something you can do about it.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Thank the Lord that we have that support, but so many others don't.
Yes. That's right, because praying about it actually is a problem-solving move, right? I'm going to pray about that. I want God to be involved with it. Okay, Betsy?
Just thinking, worry sometimes is like a rocking chair. You are doing something, but you are getting nowhere.
That's good.
Yeah. You are working it over.
Yes, that's right. You're not making any ground. Good. Eric?
I was thinking the image of Hezekiah taking the letter of Sennacherib.
Yes. Have you been reading my notes? No, that's just one of my favorite illustrations of it.
Yeah. I think it's an excellent image.
Yes, and actually we will go there. I don't know if we'll get there today, but that idea of really bringing to God and then leaving it there. Because what we do is, let me take that back and work on it. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's back. No, I'll take it back again. Yeah, absolutely. Rhonda, last comment.
Oh, he's the last one. I'm not sure why. Now, if you look at the first part, it talks about learning, receiving, hearing, and seeing the word and those things in there. That's really an immersive experience. That's how I work on learning a new language. You have to go at it different ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have to hear carefully. You have to learn. You have to go out somewhere and
look
think
at
about
it,
these things and review. And once that gets in you, the transition to doing is the hard part. For instance, most people know what the fruits of the Spirit are, but actually getting out in the public and working on those, it will happen. You will get to the doing part, but you are forced to, I need patience here, I need calm, I need this. And then you get busy and you remember whatever you were worrying about, you completely forgotten for the whole day because you're serving other people.
Good.
Fine, that's the most helpful.
That's good. Yep, and I'm going to engage and focus on this. And those things have such a positive feedback loop with it, right? Okay. Model in Paul's life and teachings, do these things and peace will follow, right? Do these things. I don't know if we've stated the obvious here, but do these things, that's learning by doing, and the God of peace will be with you. So he doesn't just say, think about some things, and that's important. He doesn't just say, have that Bible verse that I want you to pull out of your back pocket and memorize, and that is very good. But he adds to that, these things do, and the God of peace will be with you. So to summarize some of this, awareness, notice what you're thinking about, notice that you're anxious, and then choose to focus on other things, choose to pray, do what Paul did and taught, and peace will follow. Okay, so looking at this, what are some biopsychosocial spiritual elements? Okay, I'm going to start with the guy and his thoughts. So that's the psycho, which means the thinking, the cognitive. So what in here, just real quick, what in here do we see is talking about our thinking?
Well, you pray about it instead of like worrying.
Okay, so I'm going to think about these things and choose to bring that to God. Okay, and to say the very obvious, these things think about, right? Think about these things. Paul focuses on our thinking. Work on what your thinking should focus on, right? Work on that. What should I be focused on? What we think about matters. Thankfulness. Dixon mentioned that. Thankfulness impacts us. Gratitude. Okay. What are some body elements here where our thinking impacts our body?
Obviously, if you think about lovely things, won't be thinking about having those as much dark thoughts.
Okay, and that's going to impact us.
It really does get in there.
So this peace idea, right? These things do, and the God of peace will be with you. The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your mind. Is peace something that is felt? Is it connected with emotions? We're talking about that emotions are a bodily thing, right? A body thing. Peace. It's emotion. It's more than just that, but it includes that, right? Includes that. Peace, emotion, guards your heart. Do these things, action, things you need to do to have peace and to conquer worry and anxiety, right? So you got to, some of our things we do are just mental choices and you don't see anything on that side, but a lot of it is just really doing things with your body, right? And then the relational aspect, the social piece. What are some social, relational things here?
I mean, it all relies on your relationship with God.
Oh, that's where it starts. So I'm going to bring it to God in prayer, this trust, right? So trusting God leads to peace. There's that relationship with God. How you think about other people impacts you. I think a lot of this, honestly, is in the context of Philippians 4, is the relational side. That's where Yodi and Syntyche said, hey, you need to get along, help people to get along, Clement, blah, blah, blah. So think about good things with each other. And so I'm going to think about true things with my brother. I'm going to think about honorable things about my brother. I'm going to think fair thoughts about people, right? And I think pure thoughts, lovely thoughts about people. So I don't think it's just generic, like watch movies that are true, honorable, just, pure, lovely. I think a lot of this is about your brothers and sisters. Are you thinking true things about them? Okay, I'm telling myself he always does that. Well, no, he doesn't always do that. Let's be fair. Let's be true. Let's be honorable, right? All that. So trusting God is a relationship thing. How we think about other people is a relationship thing. And of course, modeling by Paul, right? The things we saw in Paul. Okay, let's keep going and pick up some more where we left off. We talked about that your average American, probably in the terms of doing and thinking and feeling, we feel first and then we act on our feelings. I feel this way, so I do it. And then only later do I think about it, right? So that's not good. So God's word tells us not to trust in our feelings. The heart is deceitful above all things, desperately sick. Who can understand it? Three great points. Your heart lies to you. It is broken and you can't figure it out, right? That's your heart. So Proverbs 28:26, he who trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be saved. And, you know, we're not trying to trust in our own mind. We're not trying to trust in our feelings and our heart. So contrary to what every radio song and every Disney movie tells you, don't listen to your heart. Don't follow your heart. Don't trust in your thinking. Don't let your feelings dictate your life decision. Okay, so we talked about that last time. So much better is the think, do, feel model, right? Think, do, feel. I'm going to think and I'm going to act and my feelings will follow. I'm not led by feelings. I know that my feelings will change. And you see how this is learning by doing? I'm changing my feelings by what I do. So think before you act. Fill yourself with God's word. This is so important for us. This is along the lines of watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. I need to think about this stuff before the temptation shows up. Thinking, preparation, so that I make the right decisions. Always do what God says. Walk in wisdom. You'll feel different later, right? And we used this line last Sunday. The brain drags the guts, right? And what do we say that means? That expression, the brain drags the guts.
Our guts would be thought of as feeling. Yeah. Bowels of mercy.
Yes.
We feel that there. And what you think about makes a difference.
So sometimes this feels hard or I feel this way, but I'm going to do the right thing, right? I know that's right, so I'm going to do it. And guess what? My feelings will follow. I'll feel better later. I'll feel differently later. So, the rational side of your brain needs to win. And guess what? That strengthens that muscle. Your feelings will follow later. And that gets things going in the right direction. Whereas if I'm being led by my feelings all the time, then I'm not strengthening the wise part of my brain, the rational part. Those muscles are atrophying. Okay. So hugely important principle that we're talking about. We think differently when we act differently, right? Our behaviors change our mind and our heart. Now, it may take a while. It may take a really long time for our better choices to grow us and help me to think better and to feel better. But it's there. One surefire way to change your thinking is to change your actions. That's what we saw in Philippians 4. These things do, and the God of peace will be with you. And just practical examples. You pray for your enemies long enough, you start to feel differently about them. You're really mad at your kids, you're really mad at your spouse, you're really mad at your parents. Pray for them, right? Serve them. And by doing that, you're going to change your attitude. It's going to follow. It's going to improve. So there's this feedback loop that really, really helps us here. So I'm not only changing my feelings, but also when I do certain things and I choose the right path, I choose the more rational decision, etc. That comes back and helps my thinking. It changes my feeling and it changes my thinking as well. So let's talk about how this applies to the principles of the pit that we've been at. Principles of pit 3 and 4 were the deeper you are in the pit, the less rational you are, and therefore the less effective it is to directly address your thinking. So this is what helps us so much when we're in the pit. When a person's deep in the pit, just tell them to think better. Think better. You should be thinking better, right? That's not going to be what's helpful. We saw that with Job's friends. They should have known that people in the pit say exaggerated things. They should have cut him some slack. Okay. So we talked about this illustration. This is kind of where we wrapped up. Okay, so your kid comes to you. It's 10 o'clock at night. They say, Dad, I'm scared about going to Florida because I read in a book about an alligator that crawled through a screen door in Florida and almost ate a family. And Grandpa's house has a screen door, so I don't want to go to Florida, right? So, our response is, how do I respond to that? Okay, so the kid is scared. The kid doesn't want to go to Florida. And are you going to convince them, no, that won't happen? How do you know it won't happen? You don't know that, right? Because it happened once, and so an alligator might go through Grandpa's screen door, right? Do you think, talking about statistics, you know, the likelihood of that is that only happens like every few years. So it's just not very likely that an alligator is going to come into the house, right? Is that going to help, right? Will endless consolation that probably won't happen be helpful? No. Okay, let me share a story. Lynn Lyons is anxiety. She's not a believer, but she's a secular therapist who works with kids. Her specialty is anxiety in kids. And so her advice, I think, tends to be very good. I really like her approach. So Lynn Lyons tells a story about this anxious girl. This is a true story. She's really anxious about robbers coming into her house at night, which is classic, right? Kids are always worrying about robbers are going to come in the middle of the night. Kidnappers are going to come in the night. Murderers are going to come in the night. Alligators are going to come in the night. I mean, you name it, it's coming in the night to get them, right? So this girl's really anxious about that. So her parents spend like $50,000 on a home security system, right? The top of the line home security, because, you know, we want her to feel safe. This is the best they've got, right? So they install this really expensive, high-tech home security system. And that helps the girl for a little while. Until she's watching a Mission Impossible movie when they break through the security system, right? Or whatever it is. And she realizes, wait a second, people out there can break through this kind of stuff. And so she's just as anxious as before, but now they spent $50,000 on the system. So they say, okay, great. So they get a dog. They get a big dog, a mean dog, you know, whatever. And the dog's going to be in the girl's room at night is going to help her feel better. Well, for whatever reason, this dog, she likes the dog fine, I guess, this dog doesn't want to sleep in her room at night. So they're like trying to get this dog to sleep in the room. What's the point? What's the point of that? Is the endless reassurance is not what the kid needs, right? Now, we'll talk later about what a good response would be and how to actually help that situation. So don't worry, that's down the line. But the bottom line here is we don't help people who are in the pit by beating on the think better drum. Think better, think better. That's not rational, right? That's not whatever, okay? They're probably thinking as best they can, right? If they're really in the pit, they're barely holding on and thinking poorly, but they're doing what they can. So the think, do, feel model is helpful. We need to understand the think, do, feel. Think right, do the right things. That'll help your feelings, that'll help your thinking. But think, do, feel is not as useful when your thinking's impaired, right? A preacher tells you, well, you just need to think better and then do better. You're like, I'm thinking as best I can, right? Another way to say this is people who are deep in the pit are not going to be able to think their way out of the pit. So here's what we need, is we need the improved thinking that comes from better decisions. And we act better, we make different decisions, and that really helps our thinking. So this is just another way of thinking that I think is more helpful for people in the pit. Think, do, feel is good. Don't get me wrong. Think, do, feel is good. But even better than that, when someone's in the pit and their thinking is impaired, it's the AB model. And the AB model is basically just a more nuanced version of that. And here's what it means. It's not that hard. It just goes back and forth between A and B. A and B and A and B. Okay, so we have some awareness. You help them with some awareness. I want you to be noticing this pattern, noticing what leads to this, etc. And then with that awareness, we're going to make some better decisions, right? We're going to have better behaviors. The behavior just means your choices, your decisions, right? Well, guess what? When we change our behaviors, that comes back and improves awareness, okay? Now, I know the animation is simple here, but do you see the point? The point is, is that if I change my behavior, I make different choices, make different decisions, that then comes back and improves my awareness. I'll be a little more aware next time. I'm a little more, oh yeah, I've been through this before. Oh yeah, last time I was really, really upset about that, but later I realized I was overreacting, you know, or something like that. Well, guess what? Improved awareness, now a bigger arrow, and better behaviors, and it just keeps going, right? So what we're doing is doing our best to increase awareness of what's going on. That might be pitfalls, right? Every time you hang out with those guys after church, sorry, I said the wrong words. Let's try that again. Every time you hang out with those guys after work, you end up going to the bar and you end up drinking, right? That's a pitfall. You need to not.
That one would have come out funny.
Yeah. I'm glad I stopped myself. At least I've realized. Yeah. So every time you hang out with those people, you do bad things, right? Every time you hang out with those guys, you go back to the pit. So noticing those, noticing tendencies, right? Look, when you're lonely, that's when you tend to look at pornography. Noticing patterns. When you come home from work and you've had a bad day is when you tend to look at pornography, right? Noticing your emotions. When you get angry is when you yell at your kids. You shouldn't do that. So increase awareness, noticing those things, lead to better behaviors, different actions, which then come back and improve my thinking. I grow in my awareness, I grow in my thinking, all that. So it's this upward spiral, right? So the improved awareness, then I can make better and better actions, things like that. So that's the whole point, is we think differently when we act differently. And so instead of telling someone just to think better, we need to help them grow in awareness, make better choices. That's what's going to help them think better. So the goal is to create this upward spiral of growing awareness, which is good thinking, for improved behaviors, making better decisions, which then circle back and improve our awareness, which circles back to improve our behaviors. Now, sorry to blow away with you with my animation skills, but here's my animation of the upward spiral, right? So behaviors, improving awareness, improving behaviors, improving awareness, improving behaviors. See that? Upward spiral. So that I might consider a career in cartooning, I think. So that's the goal, the upward spiral of awareness, improving behaviors, improving awareness. Does that make sense? Yes, Brian.
What if you can't, so like the first example of the girl who's scared someone's gonna rob her or whatever, what if you can't convince her that she's wrong? Like, the only thing, she was scared of something and then she wasn't really a behavior, it wasn't like she was like talking going to the bar or watching pornography, she wasn't doing something, she was just scared.
Right, so you're not gonna convince her that an alligator won't either.
Right.
So what you need to do is you're changing what happens there. So instead of you trying to reassure her, you're going to say things like, we're just going to have to do the hard things and God will take care of us. Daddy has to do scary things all the time. Today I had this scary thing. The change in behavior there actually is, instead of giving reassurance, we're going to help her through that moment without the reassurance. And then she'll learn she doesn't need mommy and daddy to convince me when there's hard things, you know. So that's kind of more advanced version of that. Sure. But the change behavior there is, instead of trying to reassure in one way, we're going to change what we're giving her, and then she's going to then improve. Oh, I can handle this, you know, that kind of thing.
Hey, Jay.
Yes.
So thinking about the behaviors, we're talking about that in the context of maybe spiritual behaviors, but I think let's not forget there are also just regular physical, just general practices like sleep, like diet, like those kind of things can take us out of our rational thinking.
Yep.
And some of the practices we might take that aren't necessarily sinful spiritually, but take us to a mental state where we can't think properly and make good sound decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's our next topic, is you're talking about addiction in general. So and that applies to things that are sinful, but we can be addicted to things that in and of themselves aren't sinful, right? We can be addicted to other kinds of things. So again, the awareness. Okay, my doctor told me,
I'm sorry, Garrett had his hand up.
Yeah. So let me address your thing, right, and then I'll let him talk. You just have to wait, Eric. This is going to be good for you. So my doctor told me I need to exercise. I don't want to exercise. I don't feel like exercising. Okay, I realize I'm feeling depressed. I realize that I don't want to do this. But you know, last time I did it, it went fine. Last time I did it, it went okay. And I did feel better afterwards. And my wife keeps telling me I don't listen to the doctor. I should probably listen to the doctor. So I'm going to go exercise. I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to, but I'm not going to follow my feelings. And I'm going to get in the habit. And, you know, after doing that for a few weeks, you're now in a much better habit of that. So I'm growing in my awareness of some of these things. I'm setting up some new habits. And so, yeah, the exercise or not is not in and of itself sinful thing. But I'm going to notice, look, I do this all the time. I work out for 2 days and then I stop. Okay, I'm going to do better than that this time. So it's just going to be that kind of loop too. Okay, Eric?
As you say, to me, it was helpful with the illustration of, like, because I was trying to imagine, like, how is it that we could not be aware of our thinking or whatever, you know, or how could we not be thinking logically? Like, there was a story about a man who had been, a policeman who had been in a gunfight and had some, like, PTSD, and he was talking with a therapist, and the wind blew the door and slammed it shut. And in a moment, he was down on the ground, hand beside his, at his hip, though he had no gun there, you know, breathing hard on the ground, yep. You know, like, and it was not that he thought someone is shooting a gun at me, right? He didn't have a logical thought that led him to that moment. It was a reaction.
Yes. You know? Yes.
And like that, and they talk about how like those kind of reactions that are just kind of built in. When I've had gone through a trauma or something like that, are healed through connections, you know, and that
relationships.
Piece of it,
yes.
Relationships.
Yes.
And so anyway, that helped me understand like how could we get to that place?
Absolutely. Yes. So everyday example of where my flesh just kind of takes over and I'm not thinking is when there's cookies on the counter, I don't go, I think my calorie intake for today is okay. And I'm gonna slowly savor this cookie. Here's what happens. I blink and that cookie's gone. Like, I ate that thing without even, what's that?
Please.
Yeah, yeah. I ate it and I didn't even like enjoy it. Like, it's just like, it's there in my hand. No, it's on the counter in 1 second. And then like I'm wiping the crumbs off the next second, right? It's like, it just happens automatically. Okay, so that just happens when our flesh, I call them automatic behaviors, right? We just kind of jump into that. Let's apply that a little bit more alarming. You're in habit growing up in the world, and every time you order up pizza, you get beer with it. So you're picking up that Domino's. You're Christian now. I know I shouldn't be drinking, but I'm driving home, and the pizza, and I smell that pizza, and my brain is thinking, next stop is the liquor store, right? That's the habit I'm in. And like, without even thinking, there I am. I'm like pulling in. Okay, wait a second, awareness. Well, what's going on? I can stop this. I can stop this progression, right? I can stop this train right now. Be aware of that. I'm going to keep driving. I'm going to drive on home. I don't need to stop and pick up any beer right now. So, you know, that kind of automatic thinking and awareness.
5 minute warning.
Really helps us. Okay. So, addiction. Let's at least start this. No surprise, addiction is one of the easiest ways to get in the pit. The best way to get out of the pit is to never get in the pit in the first place, if that's possible. Easier said than done, right? In the world we live in especially. Many addictions are created by ourselves. Most addictions, is it fair to say, are created by ourselves? I don't know. I don't, the best answer. But many to most addictions are ones that we ourselves started, right? Well, 1 Corinthians 6 gives us a great description of the root problem here. All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. That would be of a lawful thing. All things are lawful, but I won't be dominated by anything. So when it comes to addictions, some addictive things are just sinful. Illicit drugs, right? Lust, where you're hooked on lust, you're enslaved to lust. Your greed, you're controlled by greed, you're enslaved to greed, drunkenness, etc. But some things we're addicted to aren't sinful in and of themselves. It's just not helpful, right? I there's nothing sinful about this thing, but it's just not helping my walk. It's just not a good thing for me as a Christian. And then some things are not sinful, but they have mastery over us. They dominate us, control us, they enslave us. which of course is also not helpful, but kind of a different flavor here, a different thing to think about. So Paul says there's some things that are lawful, but I don't need them in my life, right? It's weighing me down. There might be something that's not sinful in itself, but it's controlling me. It dominates me. It makes me its slave, right? Christ is our Lord, and nothing else should be. So I think that really gets the ball rolling in the right direction, talking about addiction. Well, it's not sinful, but is it helpful, and is it controlling me? So let me just list some things. This is a short list of some modern, non-sinful things that can be unhelpful or control us and can literally become addictive. So screens just overall have such a potential to be unhelpful and addictive and enslaving. So most social media, most video games, most videos, most TV, most movies, right? We just need to be aware of the enslaving, like literally the creators of social media are trying to addict us to those devices, right? And we'll talk about dopamine. I don't know if we'll get to dopamine today, but we'll say the word dopamine 400 times on Wednesday. They're trying to give us dopamine hits by, okay, I post this. And if you've ever felt that, you post this thing, you send it out onto the web, and then you like want to check it. And then your phone even tells you, bing, oh, someone liked it. Bing, someone else liked it. And you're constantly getting these hits, these dopamine hits, by you doing this thing, and you're nervous and excited, and then you're getting the dopamine from that. So there's just an addictive thing built into it, intentionally. Medicine and drugs, of course. Pain meds can be very helpful, right? My wife just had surgery. For a limited time afterwards, she used pain meds. But we just have to realize those are dangerous things, right? That those can be addictive. Christians, I think after surgery, can use pain meds. But we also need to be wise about that and be have our eyes wide open about the dangers of pain meds. Alcohol, caffeine, you know, those can be unhelpful things that can literally become addictive for us. So our next subtopic, you know, the primary thing we're talking about is principles of the pit, how we struggle. But our next little thing here is going to be dopamine. We're going to talk about dopamine. And we're going to directly tie it into pornography, because believe it or not, pornography is more enslaving through dopamine than even cocaine is. And it's unbelievable just how much pornography controls us. So, but before we jump into that, I mean, I know this is going to ring any time. Any other thoughts you wanted to mention with just some of these introductory thoughts on addiction? Okay, so dopamine is the brain response. It's the neurochemical that is this feeling of satisfaction, feel good. It's linked to pleasure. It's linked to completing something, the satisfaction of completing something. And so who here has heard the word dopamine before? Almost everybody, right? This is the world we live in, right? It's like when my kids are talking about like their carbohydrates and their proteins at meals. Like when I was a kid, we were not talking about carbohydrates, right? And this, like, just the world we live in, the language we use is so scientific. So we talk about dopamine. We understand that. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about this reward system, this feel-good hormone linked to pleasure and motivation. And that's what that's where we'll go with it, God willing, on Wednesday. Thank you guys so much for your participation today.